The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
This episode of Beyond is brought to you by Gamefly.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 Yeah.
We're doing it again.
We did it again.
We're rusty. Yeah. It's been
Beyond.
A second.
Beyond.
Well, I did it last week.
You were here. Before. Apparently, that was the best episode yet.
I haven't been here since like the Greg and Colin days. It's been a minute.
Yeah, yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah, I was a listener since back in those days. I'm glad that.
Bunker's Duzzler.
Just disappointing yourself.
Honestly, I'm pretty disappointed with. Anyway, welcome to Beyond. This is a show we do every week about PlayStation. Sometimes some of us aren't here, but this week we are. I'm Max Scoville, and I'm joined by Brian Altano.
Hey, baby, baby.
And Marty Sliva.
I didn't like the fact that you called our audience children.
What?
You said baby, baby.
I was told this was a show for children.
Oh, you called us baby, baby.
That was it. You each now have a baby and you must raise it.
I'm going to be a very bad father. I'm going to be honest.
All right. All right. So we're going to be talking about some video games. So if you don't like them, stop listening and go do anything else. First up, there's some games that came out this week. A bunch of them. We're in that wonderful the thick of the season, and there's all sorts of treats.
Where are we getting? Fall has arrived. The leaves have turned, and
the bramble's now dangerous.
Yeah. What?
Yeah. Don't get in the bramble. It's sharp.
Yes.
It's sharp autumnal bramble.
I can't imagine why anyone would have problems with this show. I think we run a pretty tight ship here.
Yeah.
you guys been playing South Park?
Yes.
And it rules?
The fractured
bungle.
Butthole.
I put about 10, 12 hours into it. I'm liking it a lot. And Brian, you and I were talking about this earlier today about how, like, it's, for me, it's sort of just the sum of its parts. I don't think there's any one thing it does that's, like, incredible or exceptional,
right?
But every system that's at play and like everything you're doing is entertaining. Like, I'm having fun doing every single thing I'm doing.
Yeah, I completely agree. And so let's backtrack real quick, because you said something that I think is very important when talking about this game. You said you've played 12 hours already, which is 2 hours longer than the entire last game was.
Yes.
So that's important to note here, that this game is now around 20 hours, are we hearing?
Yeah, that's what Dan Stapleton, our reviewer, who gave it, I believe, an 8.0.
Yeah, which is fair.
That's what he gave it.
I'm cool with that.
Yeah, totally think it's a great game.
Not like he needs my approval.
No. But yeah, if you, one of the things a lot of us liked about the original was that it felt like it was like an RPG, but of the 16-bit length. Like, yes. If you go back and play a lot of those games, like, you can finish Chrono Trigger in, you know, 10 to 12 hours.
Yeah.
Whereas this definitely expands upon everything. Everything feels a little bit more. The customization options here are much bigger than they were in the first game. The progression system's much bigger. And sort of just the overall scope of the story ends up going to a lot more places.
Now, real stupid quick question. Yeah. If you didn't touch the first game, is it totally okay to jump into this?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah,
it's
I think
South
so.
Park, so
yeah. Yeah. I mean, it slowly, like MEC here, it, like, references the first game, but as you... you know, as you're going, it's mostly this brand new story, and it really pulls from there's like a prequel episode that you can watch that sort of fills you in on everything, which is more than you need. Yeah.
Yeah, so this game, gameplay-wise, sort of changes things up from the last game. It feels a little bit more I'm not sure, like, the best game to sort of compare it to, because it's grid-based, turn-based combat.
Yeah.
But it's a little more dynamic.
It's like a little less – little less Final Fantasy, a little more Fire Emblem kind of.
Kind of, yeah. It feels kind of like that Ghost Recon 3DS game that launched at 3DS.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good.
But a lot funnier, a lot stupider.
Yeah.
Wait, you mean to say the South Park game is funnier than a Tom Clancy game?
Yes, wow. By far. I wish Tom Clancy games had more farts in them, but.
There is Tom Clancy's Open Mic War is coming up soon. That's going to be about the war of an open mic night, so yeah. that'll be pretty funny.
A lot of farts there.
Yeah,
tons of farts. So, yeah, this game is, just to get it out of the way, it's, you know, revoltingly crude and disgusting and racist and homophobic and misogynistic and all of those things. It does that thing that South Park does best, which it offends everybody, which in turn offends nobody. Yeah. But it also is incredibly endearing. Like, I think that for a game about children, it sort of captures that kind of whimsy and stupidity and joy that you have playing like stupid games in your backyard with your friends when you're in third grade.
If It's a Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown is like the ideal of what it was like as a kid.
Yes.
This is like the reality of what you were like as a kid. Like you were swearing, you were doing things, you were staying up way past your bedtime. Like you were causing trouble in the streets and getting yelled at by adults.
Yeah. If you look at like sort of like Kevin Smith and how his brain stopped working at like age 20, right? And he's capitalized. And I mean that in a good way. Like all of his movies and shows have basically leaned on what it's like to be late high school, early college, like young adult feeling. Trey Parker and Matt Stone have squarely landed on like that perfection of what it's like to be in third grade, where there's innocence, there's stupidity, there's the smartest kid you know is an idiot, and people are saying horrific things and doing horrible things because adults aren't really around.
Yeah.
Some of the enemies in this game are fourth graders and sixth graders.
Yeah.
Most of your costumes are sort of stuff that you find like made out of Tupperware and cardboard tubes. But this game has a ton of emphasis on superhero culture. And so it picks apart DC. It makes fun of Zack Snyder. It makes fun of Marvel. It sort of finds an equation for every character in South Park with a contemporary version of them in a in existing.
And they've been playing with us on the show recently where there's kind of the different superheroes.
And one thing, you did mention the thing about how it's South Park, so it pushes everyone's button and offends everybody. So its whole thing is by offending everybody, it offends nobody.
Yes.
But one thing is it also does a lot of really smart, subversive things with stuff like your character's gender and sexuality, which like I won't really go into specifics because that's kind of a spoiler. Like I really liked how they dealt with it. But like Alana and I were talking, she was playing the game and she was like, oh, it's weird. Like you can create a girl. She's like, I created someone that looked like me, but they still refer to me as he and like a boy. And then there's a thing a couple hours in where like that changes in a really interesting, smart way that I didn't expect a South Park game to handle. Yeah,
Mr. Mackey is sort of, he sort of plays the same role a lot of us have played in the last few years, where we're tolerant to everything that's happening around these conversations in terms of gender and sex, but we don't really know how to answer them, and we're not really sure what sort of like nomenclature people want for certain aspects of things. And he kind of stumbles through it, but gets it right, which is interesting. And he repeatedly kind of invites you back to sort of be like, hey, so, you said you were this, but does that mean this, this, and this? And the way he answers questions and interacts with you is very smart. And I think it's a weird take on learning about sort of gender fluidity from a game about cartoon farts. You know?
Yeah, totally.
So it's got that's why I think this game works really well in the same way you're saying. Like, it's sort of a jack of all trades. It's not really mastering any of them, but it's doing a lot very well. It's also, from a video game perspective, simply playing it scratches a lot of the sort of itch that you'll have as a gamer to like sort of fill up bars and level up things.
Yeah.
Every single thing you pick up or collect adds incrementally to something else you're looking for. When you get a costume, when you collect things out of garbage cans or vending machines, you can use them to craft things that will all add up to different things.
And you constantly have like 100 different micro objectives, which is sort of, man, this fall to me is like that mechanic or that idea is sort of in almost every game I'm playing, from Destiny 2 to Shadow of War to Assassin's Creed to this, where you have everything you're doing, you're filling up a bar of, loot 10, kill 10 enemies or loot 10 things or craft 100 things or travel this far or solve this many puzzles. And so you're constantly getting this IV drip of, you know, new and better weapons and gear that's slowly adding to this core number. Like this game has I don't know, what's the term in this game? Like that number that you keep feeding towards.
Right.
And it's the same thing that Destiny has, like light level and power level and everything. So, I think that works really well. One thing that I'm not crazy about is the game is really easy.
Yeah.
And I've even cranked the difficulty up to the max, and I never feel like I'm in danger in combat.
Right.
And
it's also very forgiving in that way, too.
Yeah, and the puzzles aren't, so far from what I've played, it's they call them puzzles, but none of them are puzzles.
Yeah, which I think is kind of good, because I think the show is a pretty casual watch and the game looks exactly like it. So I kind of appreciate that the game doesn't push back too much.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of has the sort of puzzle level of a third grader figuring stuff out, which I think works to its favor. That said, Marty's right. If you are looking for like a really deep, engaging combat system, I think that the combat system is actually pretty deep in the variables and the amount of characters and sort of artifacts that you can apply to your character, which you unlock more of. Different costumes are mostly
aesthetic.
Mm-hmm. But there are different, like, there are three different. Right now, my character represents three different types of classes. And every time I think, like, oh, he's a brawler, they're like, oh, he's also an assassin. And he's also, like,
speedster.
Yeah. So, like, Cartman keeps pulling you in and being like, hey, we're going to add another class to you. Or we're going to fill out your backstory a little more.
Yeah.
Which I think is really funny, because it's sort of like the way kids invent rules to a game on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, when they're in the backyard and they're like, the bushes are ice and the floor is lava.
Like, you're filling out your sort of D&D character sheet. Like, what we're seeing right now, if you're watching the show, is like, Cartman's like, what's your inciting incident? Like, if Bruce Wayne's was just watching his parents get murdered, it's that you walked in and saw your dad having sex with your mom.
Yeah.
And he keeps bringing it up about how this is like a traumatizing experience. And Kyle will be like, Eric, literally all of our dads had sex with our moms.
That's how,
like,
we
that's
born.
How this worked. And I find it really funny, because you start filling out like what your weaknesses is, like what your religion is, what your race is. I don't know.
I'll say that, like, in terms of like really shocky set pieces, I think it's a step behind the last
so
one,
far,
in that I haven't fought Kim Kardashian's aborted fetus yet, which was an actual boss fight in the last game. That said, there is a sort of boss run in this game where you fight strippers,
mm-hmm.
which is really funny. The Raisins, who are basically like
Child Hooters
girls, are in this game. A lot of the character classes you fight are really interesting. Like, you'll beat up everyone from rednecks to police to children, fourth graders, sixth graders.
I'm really liking what I'm hearing about this.
I'm liking it the more I'm talking about it, actually.
I think with the first game, they really had to establish that, yes, this is a South Park game, this is a functional video game, but like I think they probably lean pretty hard into like the bawdiness and the raunchiness of it, just to be like, hey, it's South Park, everybody. But in this, I always love South Park more when it goes into the sort of the earnest, like, genuine stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think it's also the show, for better or worse, leans really hard into topicality, right? Like, during the election, you had to hear about Trump mm-hmm. and Clinton every day. And
which doesn't work with a video game, really.
And I don't think so, and like, I was pretty burned out by all that, just dealing with it in reality. And then to turn on the TV for escapism, I wasn't really getting what I was looking for. But with this game, this feels like some of my favorite. I mean, Scott Tenorman Must Die is my favorite South Park episode ever, because it's about a chili cook-off where Tom York comes to make fun of a child who had to accidentally eat his parents.
Yeah,
like, that's brilliant, and it had nothing to do with Bill Clinton or anything like that. And this game feels like a lot of that stuff, right? Like, it's not really like, you know, there is some topical humor here and there, which I'm sure won't age well in a few years, but it looks and feels like the show's best episodes, and I think it's doing a lot of really great things.
Yeah, ooh. It totally makes me want a game of this quality in something like, I want a Simpsons game back like this. I want a Rick and Morty game like this, you know, like Archer.
It reminded me a lot of Bart versus Space Mutants the NES game, because there is, like, very specifically in this game, there are certain colored things that you can interact with in the world.
Yeah, that's funny.
You can collect and you can find. Yeah. I was getting, like, serious nods to that.
Yeah.
I think the odds of us getting a solid Rick and Morty game, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Right.
Like, because those guys actually care about games, and I think
Justin Roiland has Squanchtendo.
There was a VR thing, but we came out of the sort of Adventure Time era with like 30 different games.
None of them were good.
None of them were really that great. There was a couple that were like okay, right? Like their whole thing was they would try to ape different styles.
Yeah, one was like Zelda 2.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I think here we're seeing, you know, if you look at Ubisoft's track record just over the last few months, it's been really interesting that like two of their more successful ones have been partnering with an IP and making like a kind of funny, quirky take on the turn-based strategy game.
Right? Yeah.
Between Mario and Rabbids and this, I'm liking this side of them.
Yeah.
You know?
And this is this game's led by Ubisoft San Francisco, which is their first non-Rocksmith game. So it just sort of puts them on the map as like making, I don't want to say actual games, but like
that rules.
Games that aren't Rock Band.
The one thing Rocksmith. I will say about this game is if you played the last game and you had any sort of technical hiccups or anything like that. I lost the entire section of Canada.
Oh, God, that's brutal.
The autosaves weren't kicking in. There are moments in this game where there's just like, it's sort of like getting on a new OS where there's just like jank for a few days and they fix it. I'm sure it'll all get patched, but in fact, I saw a patch this morning. But I was playing yesterday and a battle ended and then just like, nothing happened for like 30 seconds and then it popped in and I was just like, so I've been manually saving a lot just to be safe.
Okay. So I came back from a bar last night and I went to play the game and I'm relatively sure this was a glitch and it wasn't like a story beat I missed, but I went into Cartman's kitchen and there were two of his mom occupying the same space but with different animations saying different things. So I would like go to talk to her and one would be like giving me an item and one would be asking me where Eric is. Well, and I'm like, did I completely miss a thing where there's two of her, or is this game being weird? I'm relatively sure the game's being weird.
It's South Park, so you don't have to joke or not.
Yeah, yeah. But it's also, I mean, leaning into the comedic timing of that show is Cartman will say something, and then the main character will just kind of sit and stare.
Yeah, because you are.
And so when that happens in the game, there's been a couple times where I'm like, is this broken?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Hello there. Would you like to save money and play more video games? Well, let me introduce you to our sponsor, Gamefly. Gamefly is the best way to buy and rent all your favorite games. At Gamefly.com, you pick your favorite games and have them mailed directly to your door or mailbox. Gamefly is the leading video game rental service with over 9,000 titles to choose from. You can try your favorite games before you buy and keep the games as long as you want with no late fees. So if you're stuck on a boss fight or having a really good time, it's not a big deal. You can cancel at any time, and they also offer movie rentals too. Go to Gamefly.com/farbeyond and start your free premium 30-day trial today. The premium trial allows you to check out two games and or movies at a time. You can only get this offer, again, by visiting Gamefly.com/farbeyond. Now go sign up and start playing all your favorite games absolutely free for 30 days right now.
All right. So another game you guys have been playing is The Evil Within 2.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's an incredibly spooky video game.
Is it? Is it very spooky?
It's pretty spooky. Yeah. It's a solid spookster. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A solid spookster.
No, I love that we're getting the follow-ups to the games that came out, what, like 2 years ago?
Three years.
Because South Park was on last gen.
That was very tail end though.
Yeah, right? But it was, I think literally the new consoles were already out when it came.
They did port it over though, which is nice.
Yeah.
It's funny we're getting South Park, Mordor, Evil Within, Wolfenstein,
all the sequels from 3 or 4 years ago. Yeah.
But Evil Within, I've never been like really big in the horror stuff, so I kind of passed on that one. And I'm sort of curious about it, but this was Shinji Mikami's kind of like sort of separate from Resident Evil return to form.
For Tango, his new studio, or I guess new-ish studio. And now he's just EP on the game, and this guy Johannes is taking the reins, which I was talking to Caleb about, and it's interesting because this almost feels like that guy's, like, he's Kamiya, and this is his Resident Evil 2.
Yeah.
It's been like, hey, you've been shadowing me for this long, now make your own thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm really liking it so far. It's definitely a horror game, but it also leans, it's a ton of weird psychological, like Jacob's Ladder, and then almost like not Matrixy, but there is like the whole thing about this like shadow organization, and you're submersing yourself in this goo called STEM,
right,
and you're like reliving these memories and going into people's subconscious.
Yeah, and I think that both helps and hurts it. I'm a huge Resident Evil guy. Specifically, 4 is one of my favorite games of all time. 7 this year, was that this year? God,
yeah.
Which I adored for the most part up until like the last act. But that game, it's hard to say this, but that game mostly felt grounded in reality in that there was a tangible physical place you're in. The thing about Evil Within is it sort of takes a lot of the same tenets of, say, Resident Evil 4, third person, over the shoulder action game where your main character has a handgun with a light reticle on the end of it, you know, a laser pointer.
Yeah.
Once I got that in this game, I was very
happy. Yeah, you're like, yeah, that's my boy.
I was like, but it throws in all this psychological stuff so that you don't really have a sort of semblance of place or time as well.
Which I think is on purpose.
Definitely on purpose. But also, to me, it convolutes the story a little bit.
Yeah.
Where like, you know, even like in some of the early parts of this game, character breaks into his own home, finds it on fire, hears his daughter screaming, and then it sort of turns psychological horror and then you're pulled out of it. There's a lot of like, I think I'm here, but I'm not, and the scenario around me dissolves and I'm somewhere else. It's very dreamlike or nightmarish.
The first one had you going into like an alternate dimension almost, kind of?
Yeah.
Like, this weird hellscape.
I played the first one to completion, really enjoyed it. I could barely tell you what happened in the story.
Right.
Yeah, I definitely, if you're jumping into this one, whether you played the first one 3 years ago or didn't play the first one, check out, we have Evil Within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
That's a really quick primer.
Which I think is important.
Yes,
this is sort of confusing just to jump in, into.
Yeah, I was totally like, what was the deal with his daughter and his wife? Like, yeah. I couldn't really remember.
It's sort of like if the first Die Hard movie you saw was Die Hard with a Vengeance, you'd be like, I get it. He's hungover and he's confused and angry and scared.
Yeah.
And he's still doing his job, so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But who is this man?
Man, yeah. Why does he care?
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing is, you mentioned Resident Evil 4. This feels so much like a follow-up to Resident Evil 4 than any other Resident Evil game since then has, like much more so than 5 or 6.
I was saying to you, it felt like the second or third sequel to that Resident Evil 4 we never got, which was like the psychological one where Leon was seeing visions of like poltergeists.
Yeah,
in the home.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of sort of there is zombie stuff in this game, right? There are characters that are zombie-like.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all also like legitimately awesome, terrifying, like Bloodborne-esque character designs.
Yeah, one of the first boss things you see, which we've probably seen a lot of the promotional things, is this like woman with like 1,000 heads and a giant just like jigsaw on her arm.
There's this like man-dog thing.
Oh, yeah.
Basically like the top halves of two men forged in the middle, and they just run around on all four hands of the dog.
There's good men dog.
Yeah, I've really liked some of the aesthetics we've seen with this, like that whole like the weird white plastery.
Yeah,
kind of.
That's like the goopy stuff. That's the goop you go in and have these visions.
Yeah, this
see your
is
tantrums.
Really gorgeous and creepy about that.
Yeah, totally.
And I'm like more drawn to this as a sequel than I was the first one. Was it just seemed like it was very tropey.
Mm-hmm.
I remember they did this thing where they were promoting it that really, really pissed me off. Where they were like doing lots of research for this new game, and it was just a shelf of horror movies. And I'm like, that's not like, I'm like, I don't know, read some books, dude. Like, look at some old art. Like, I don't know, like, dig deeper.
Yeah, that's not.
I mean, I get that you're going to, you know, pull some elements from horror movies, and that's cool. But
yeah,
exclusively be borrowing from movies.
I think some of that bleeds over a little bit in here, too. But you know, it's also like, it's a weird game because I'm not really connected with the story. I don't really like the protagonist. I think the protagonist spends, like, probably the first third of this game walking into areas and going, like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Huh? Who's that? Yeah. It's like, well, you're in the Evil Within too, man. Like, you know, figure it out.
Yeah.
but what I will say is that they are experimenting with a lot of cool new stuff in this game, specifically the size and traversal and environments.
Yeah.
Whereas I felt the first one was a lot more sort of narrow, tunnel-based, linear, one hallway the next. You had some areas that felt a little bit more like a level. This very early on kicks you into almost an entire Silent Hill town.
Yes, it reminds me so much of Silent Hill. And you
that
can,
sounds awesome.
Like you have, you know, you need to get to whatever the garage in the other side of town, but you can also loot all these houses. Yep. There's also enemies everywhere, so you're like, what do I want to do here?
Mm-hmm. And it's not the kind of thing where I felt like I could just clear out a zone and run through it freely.
Yeah.
I would clear out an area and then get something that helped me to go back to it, and then be a whole bunch of new enemies there popping out and scaring me. So I thought that was really cool. Also, collecting stuff in this game is really fun. Upgrading your weapons and stuff like that is really fun. It's a little cumbersome because you can't just do it from like a set menu or anything. It's sort of like how in Resident Evil 4 you had to wait till you saw a merchant to like do stuff like that.
Yeah.
In this game, you have to basically go into a mirror, which will bring you into your headquarters, which you sit down in a chair and then you talk to a nurse.
And then you have a weird cat.
And then she can upgrade your sort of psychological aspects, your endurance, your strength, your weapons are all things that you can sort of interact with on the fly from like, you know, working benches.
Yeah, and there's
and stuff
craft,
like that.
Yeah, crafting and everything. And the one thing that I'm excited about, because I'm only a couple hours in, is that Lucy, who reviewed this game for us, said that it gets much stronger in its back half.
Yeah.
That this is one of those games whereas with Resident Evil 7, we were all like, man, the first two thirds were like game of the year material, and then the last third was a complete slog.
The last third of Resident Evil 7 is not great.
No.
I mean, honestly, a lot of the same way about Resident Evil 4, it just turns into this like military shooter by the end of the game.
Yeah.
But I think you're so awesome and so powered with your mechanics are so strong and your weaponry is so awesome by then that it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I hope the same will happen here. Same thing here. The game's about 20 hours long. So if you're looking to like, you know, gamefly a bunch of these things or, you know, just marathon through them, like make space.
Yeah.
Like, this fall is going to get crazy. Assassin's Creed's around the corner.
And that's we know be, that's like, not going to be short. Game, yeah, so. Yeah.
Huge game.
Yeah.
It's really interesting just the space this occupies in sort of survival horror as a genre, because like this was kind of the spiritual successor to what Resident Evil should have been before we got Resident Evil 7.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, like Mikami's off doing his own kind of side, the kind of the whole like sort of Mighty No. 9 approach to things.
Yeah.
And then we got PT and we're like, oh, whoa, Kojima's doing Silent Hill. That's going to be interesting. And then that fell through. And now it's almost like, I don't know, it's weird because Resident Evil, I feel like, kind of lapped this in a weird way.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it got a proper reboot, and this is still kind of staying a little bit true to form.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is we don't know how much of the horror Death Stranding is going to lead in, like lean into. Like, is he...
I don't know a damn thing about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, like, is Kojima going to be like, all right, I couldn't make this horror game with Konami, so now I'm going to make this horror game with my new studio.
Yeah. We've also, there's, IGN First on this new, this sort of spiritual successor
to...
Visage? Is it Visage?
Yeah.
It's like there's the game that is sort of aping PT.
Yeah, it's first person in a spooky house. Definitely looks like PT.
Yeah, it's really interesting how all this is splintered off. I mean, if you think about it, we kicked off the year with Capcom bringing back Resident Evil as a first person survival horror game in a mansion again, sort of. You know, kind of
Hillbilly Mansion.
Oh, Hillbilly Mansion. Against swamp people and what have you. And then this is just...
Swamp people and whatnot.
This is... Drain the swamp. This is going in a very different direction. So,
yeah.
But this feels very classic Resident Evil, but with lots of touches of Silent Hill and other psychological horrors. So I'm down with it.
If you went back 2 years and you were like, all right, in 2017, Capcom is going to be putting out Resident Evil 7 and Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, which is going to land better with the fans.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And you're like, oh, well, probably not the 7
get that
one
right.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is really cool, like you said, that we got the next iteration in proper Resident Evil that's really good. And then we got this from the creator of Resident Evil, which definitely feels like an evolution of what he's done with Resident Evil. And this is really good, too. So... I don't know. Just I think this is just further cementing the fact that 2017 kind of rules.
Yeah,
I think
definitely.
Well, in terms of games.
Yeah. There's kind of a life cycle with games, and when they're sort of not annualized but sort of serialized, and it's like if there's going to be a 2-year, 3-year turnaround time for games, that's almost not enough time for them to breathe. Like people need to get exhausted with a genre or whatever and then revisit it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say on behalf of both like South Park and The Evil Within, they both had 2 or 3 year turnarounds, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's pretty fascinating that both of those games are 20 plus hours.
Yeah.
You would think, I guess a lot of the development of those games was getting the groundwork down to begin with.
Sure.
And there's obviously a lot of repetitive elements in both. I mean, building out the world in South Park, getting that engine to run so it looks like the show, building out the systems and combat and characters and camera work in Evil Within.
Yeah.
A lot of it is carried over, but these are sort of quintessential sequels where they take everything that we loved the last time around and they build upon them like in a really great way.
It's funny that you mentioned Billy because I'm getting massive deja vu playing South Park. So I'm like, is this the exact same map as the last game? I'm like, Kenny's house is on the east, and then there's this junkyard, and then there's that mansion, and then there's a lake. I'm like, man, well, I remember doing all this like 3 years ago.
I'm doing the same thing with Evil Within, right? Yeah. Where it's like, I hear those piano notes, like, dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I remember all that. Like, I remember hearing it over and over again. When you go to that area where like, so around the world, there's like these hidden keys that are in statues and they open up this like sort of old school, like lock box. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a PO box in the back of like an old mailroom. And there's like a wall of them. And I specifically remember opening all of them in The Evil Within 1 and now they're all locked again.
Yeah. You know, it's like, damn it.
And I've already opened 4 or 5 and I'm like, here we go. We're doing it.
It's like the beginning of any Metroidvania where it's like death comes and takes all your powers away. And you're like, damn it. I had all that.
Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, moving on to another game that is the sequel to something that came out 3 years ago, Shadow of War.
Yeah.
Which is an interesting one because the whole hook with the first Shadow of War was unlocking new abilities and these powers and stuff. And I feel like starting off with Shadow of War, you've got more powers just at the get-go.
Yes, you feel like what Talion was like at the end of 1. They do a good job of that. And they don't strip anything away, and it's just sort of additive in early
game. This is a very odd game. I played a bunch of this. I've been sick all week, so I was sort of playing it through that haze of cough medicine and not really feeling fully at full power, whatever. And I feel like it's a really good game that I think explores parts of the first game that didn't really impress me.
Yeah.
And I know that like the whole Nemesis system was like the big, huge, impressive selling point. I thought it was fascinating how that game kind of was like, a lot of people loved it. It surprised a lot of people the first time around. And then it was the DICE Awards. The Nemesis system was like, all these developers were like, how did you do that?
Yeah.
And I think it's the kind of thing that's so high concept that it almost doesn't seem impressive to gamers.
Yeah.
And it was just like, you made a dynamic, I mean, dynamic enemies.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the Nemesis system was infinitely more interesting than any story they could have written themselves because it was one that I was sort of creating dynamically on my own. And that sounds corny. That sounds like marketing buzzword speak, you know, just
no, but they delivered on it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, but it worked. And I remember specifically asking the devs at E3 and at Gamescom, like, hey, like when this game came out 3 years ago, we were sure everyone would steal from it. And literally no one did.
Why? What so is what happened? There?
And they were like, we thought so too, but well, here it is.
Yeah.
Like, we made it
better.
I feel
like it's one of those things that's so insanely ambitious that you'd have to be crazy to try to rip it off.
I have to think Warner Brothers is going to implementing this in a superhero game, yeah. In some Superman, pretty Justice cool. League, Batman game. Like, this is too interesting of tech to not share with every game in your wheelhouse.
Batman has 250,000 nonsense villains they can lean into.
Yeah. I like the idea of the whole, like, the procedurally generated naming
Uncle
convention.
Puzzle.
Yeah.
Orcs, where it's like, oh, it's like Kaka the Beholder or,
yeah.
Like, I mean, Tug Blug the whatever.
The original thing to do that was Batman 89. You had Bob the Goon.
Yeah. No, I like the idea of it's just like, it's like Goon, like the no good Nick.
Yeah.
Like, and it's like Steve Dave, the robber.
Or the alternative. Right. They all turned into like Dick Tracy villains.
Yeah.
No Lips Manless.
No, but this game, like,
Gorblor the Butt Kisser.
Yeah. We were talking about this and how with games of this scale of like huge open world games, it's like there's almost like we don't really have time to finish them almost. Like they kind of keep going and it reaches a point where you're like, there is a story there and you can mainline the quest or you can do a bunch of side quests and like unlock stuff. But at the same time, there's also like how much time do you want to spend in this world?
Sure.
And the depth of this game, like the scale, like I'll walk by other people playing it and I'm like, oh, whoa, you're in like a jungle now?
Yeah.
There's like colorful areas.
The last game had two main environments.
Yeah, it was gray, like, and brown.
Muddy
was,
and less muddy.
Yeah. Exactly. And the latter half of the game got like lush and green. But I think a lot about a tweet that you did once, Max, which was you were talking about open world games and you put up the picture of that Homer Simpson sandwich when he gets that like 6 foot sub and he's just eating it and he's loving it. And by the end, he's like kind of sick standing over a garbage can because there's like not much left. It's or the parts he doesn't want.
I don't know if I tweeted that. I don't remember that at all.
That was fantastic.
It was, I think about that a lot with open world games because I will play an open world game to my heart's desire and go specifically for the stuff that I like in the game.
Right.
That's what happens. Like when I play GTA, I don't do any of the time trials for like car racing stuff
because
I don't care and I'm bad at it. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the game, when it's rated 100%, like I'm left with
so
like
close.
25 of those in a row and I got to play through all of them. So it does have that struggle, right?
Yeah. It's weird the way I play open world games, like different than like when I start like Uncharted or Evil Within. I'm like, I'm going to play this to completion.
Yeah.
I'm going to get through the story and see the credits. Mm-hmm. Whereas with open world games, a lot of times I just hit a point and I'm like, I enjoyed that. I'm done.
I have seen this world.
Yes. Yeah. I've conquered it. Yeah, yeah. I have done. Even though I haven't, I'm just like, I'm done. I haven't finished the story, but I feel like I'm done.
Yeah.
Like,
in this case, what's really odd is it is open world-ish. It's got different sort of arenas and then
like the hubs are,
It's really weird though, because it feels like it puts the systems first. Like, it doesn't emphasize the world, and it doesn't really encourage you to go explore. It's kind of like, go do stuff in this world, but at no point is it like, hey, just poke around, have fun.
Right.
And there'll be sort of like almost these – it's almost like starting a new job. Like, they'll bring you to a new area, and they're like, all right, well, follow Gollum around. He's going to show you – and you're like, oh, I just explored this whole map, but I was like focusing on following
Gollum,
on a waypoint rather than actually learning where everything is.
Yeah.
And it does this sort of like – like you'll climb these towers and do the whole kind of like, oh, you climb the tower and then unlock
sync
the thing.
With it, yeah.
But then it has you do this weird sort of I Spy thing where you like find things to unlock, and it seems almost antithetical to what an open world game should be or what I get.
It's
from it.
Open world, but none of its exploration,
right?
Like none of its discovery.
And as opposed to, it does the thing almost like it's sort of a more obvious version of like, I always hated it in Assassin's Creed games where you climb a tower and then it shows you this like sizzle reel montage of like, here are all the cool areas in this area.
Look
and
what we made with our friends. Yeah. And it's just it's nice,
it almost spoils the map. Like,
yeah.
The sense of actually discovering the place. And in this case, it makes you manually move the camera around to see where everything is. And then it marks your map.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, I know it's there and I know what it is and like, I can go check it out, but it feels more like checkboxes.
I think part of me legitimately thinks they added that. I mean, I don't know. I could be 100% wrong and someone from Monolith might call me out. They played Breath of the Wild and you get to the top of a tower and then you pull out your periscope and then you're looking at things and you're manually being like, that looks interesting. I'm going to put a mark there so I can remember it. It seems like you do that, but instead of it being that looks interesting, it's saying, just click that. That's that's a Shelob memory. And then, over there is one of the poem walls. And
Nausea, the skin peeler.
I mean, so much of the first game was also surprise too.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody went in with the highest of expectations and we were all blown away because it's a fantastic game. And this has a lot to live up to. I really want to love it, but I think it's just sort of, wrong timing or whatever. And it's not to say that it's not incredible and ambitious.
I think the issue is, the character is almost too overpowered. And I don't mean that in a combat sense, but in, his ability to scale things makes scaling things almost too easy. Like in Breath of the Wild and Assassin's Creed, to get to the top of something is sort of a journey, right? It's kind of a struggle. And in this game, this guy just runs up frozen waterfalls.
Yeah.
Three jumps up to the top of the highest thing, and then people are standing at the bottom kind of throwing rocks.
And then you can just jump straight down and there's no fall damage.
Yeah, it's sort of like most of the games that are open world, think about GTA 5, right? Mm-hmm. To get to the top of a building in that game, which you can't do for many buildings, you have to hijack a helicopter. Yeah. Or you need to find this weird staircase that goes up at the top. It's not programmed for a lot of the buildings in that game. But finding stuff in that game and discovery in that game is sort of incredibly important, and it's tied to the lack of ability you have rather than leaning into the ability that you do have.
Yeah.
And in this game, this guy can basically fly. It's sort of like Batman, how he can just get to the top of a building in 2 seconds. I think they do a little bit better of a job with collectibles in those games. But
yeah, it's funny, whereas with a lot of the games you just mentioned, those dynamic stories that come about are, look what I did. Look what I did in this game. Look what I did in this game. Whereas the stories that I like in this are, look what the game did to me.
Yeah.
Look what happened to me. This character, all of a sudden, this crazy orc, and he came and he intervened halfway through a fight. That was crazy. Yeah. And then he came back later on.
One thing this game does that's just unforgivable is you can't skip the orc introductions.
And sometimes there'll be four or five of them in a row.
And you're just in the middle of fighting somebody, and then this dude shows up and he gives you his opening monologue, and you're like, come on, man.
Yeah. Also, you can't skip supers in South Park, right? You can't skip and almost every battle ends with a suit. And I'm like, I've seen this montage 100 times. Yep. Please let me skip it.
I feel like we say this all the time, but just give us the option. Just let us skip stuff.
Or you see something once and then you're like, that was it once. If it happens again,
let us earn the skip.
Yeah.
Earn the skip. There we are. I didn't have it.
That's what happens. The paid DLC. I'd do paid DLC for skips.
don't put that idea out there.
Yeah,
that.
But I think where this game, from what I've seen, what it really does best is it's sort of that what they do on Chopped, where they're just like, all right, you have to make dinner. You have one dragon and you have this rancor and there's three dudes on fire and there's bees. Have fun.
It'll just
throw this bag of nonsense at you. And that's where it gets really crazy. I think that's where the stories come from, right? And that's where the real surprise of this game comes from. Because I think we're comparing it to open world games, but we should be comparing it more to kind of combat heavy games a little bit more. Because I think that's really more what it's focused on.
It lives in a very interesting space. There's nothing out there like this game.
No.
Period.
Yeah.
I sort of wish that they just let you make an orc at the beginning. I kind of wish they were just like, "Hey, you're a real nasty little man. You're gonna be just a dirty boy."
I want to be an orc.
I love orcs. They're
an
great.
An
orc, yeah. And you can pick your cool nickname, and all the people talk to you, and they're like,
Lars Uruk,
a Gluck or something.
Now, if I don't really care about Lord of the Rings, because I don't, sorry, just calm down. I can hear you getting mad in your car right now. It's okay.
I'm right here, and I'm furious.
I just don't. It's fine. It's okay. I'm glad you like it, and I don't. Will I enjoy this game, or will I still skip all the
cutscenes? It's totally fine. You can skip the cutscenes.
Yeah. I would say it's less of an emphasis on story and even more just get out there and screw with stuff.
Cool. Yeah, that's what I want to hear.
Yeah,
I like these bad dogs are real masters of the universe.
Oh, the dogs are back and they're worse than ever.
Oh, and they climb buildings? The dogs climb right straight up a building.
That's straight up He-Man.
Yeah, that's Shadow
Cannon. Give me a He-Man game in this universe.
Oh my God.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
There's something I want to mention. I did an interview for our new Facebook show, Best Next Big Game, which you can check out. It's just facebook.com/nextbiggame. I did an interview with Ash Ismail, who's the creative director on Assassin's Creed Origins, and he said something that I think is one of the most succinct and just wonderful things about designing an open world in a game. And he worked on Black Flag last, and he was saying how they got exploration right, but they didn't nail discovery.
Mm.
And the thing they really want to do with AC Origins is work on balancing exploration and discovery. And I've always tried to find it's not quite solving a puzzle, but it is that sort of in the same way that you get a new item in a game, or you solve something, or you beat a boss, or whatever. There's that sense of, of victory, and I feel like with just basic, just going out into a world and engaging with it, discovery is the perfect word for that.
Yeah,
and I feel like that's what this game is totally lacking for me. Like it just kind of throws you in, and they're like, "All right, go kill the orcs." And I'm like, "That's I love to kill the orcs, but also I don't know, I
want to
see more.
I want something interesting to be over that mountain, and I want
to be Tom Bombadil."
Yeah, I think that connects with what I was saying, right? In terms of like just getting around the universe is almost too easy. Like, it's just sort of like God mode almost.
Well, and you can now dominate a dragon and just drive, fly across. As well, say drive. That's not how dragons work.
You can drive a dragon. You can dominate it.
Now,
it's a weird thing for you to say earlier.
Shifting gears.
I have a dom. I have a dom and sub relationship with my dragon.
Shifting gears.
You kicked that thing on the side.
About Gran Turismo.
You did a good gear shift.
Yeah, Gran Turismo Sport's out this week. Literally none of us know anything about the car.
Pears played it and he likes it.
Good,
good.
He says it's very pretty and it's good for the car fans.
That's worth noting because he's a huge Forza guy.
Yeah.
Huge Forza guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he also loves realistic sims such as Mario Kart.
Yeah.
Big fan of that. No, so that's cool. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's out finally.
Yeah.
We are not playing it.
If you live in Taiwan and you're insane and rich, good news because it's getting a $46,000 bundle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is recently announced by Sony. A new Taiwanese Gran Turismo Sport PS4 Pro bundle will come with the upcoming racing simulator.
Is that a game?
A PlayStation 4 Pro.
And console. Right.
A PSVR headset, complete with Move controllers.
Two of
and
them.
The PlayStation camera.
Boom.
That's a lot right there.
Yeah.
A year's worth of PlayStation Plus.
Wow. That's a lot.
That's 60 whole bucks. A Bravia 4K HDR television.
Bravia.
Okay. Where now it's just, you're just getting your first step into gaming, apparently.
Yeah.
A Thrustmaster TGT steering wheel and pedal set for the game. It's a racing chair.
A pig
you can sit upon. And then this is the real cherry on top. An actual 2018 Mazda MX-5. So if you're in the market for,
That's pretty cheap, really, if you think about it, if you do the math, you add all that up. It's not bad. But
it seems decent. Bad,
really. You get a whole car. You get parts of another car.
You get a pig.
It's really weird, though, because I don't know if you get the car. I don't think you can fit all that into the Mazda.
No. So how
do you get probably not the Thrustmaster.
But you have to put it in the back seat, which like you get pulled over, and they'd be like, did you steal another car inside this
car?
No,
there's a smaller car inside of my adult car.
There's like, you get a steering wheel, so you have two steering wheels, and one is real.
Yeah.
I
like the Maggie
questions.
Simpson thing. Put the Thrustmaster on the passenger side, and they can just.
Why are you trying to drive using your virtual reality helmet?
Yeah.
$46,000. You still can't change your PSN name. You think if you walked up into Sony with $46,000, you're like, yo, $46,000.
Yeah.
Change my name. My name's terrible. It's a pig. Yeah. 69 24/7.
It was Analingus. I needed it out of here.
Analingus all day long.
Anna Green Gables.
Shuhei, take the money.
Yeah, I don't think this is even the most insane bundle we've ever gotten. I think there was a Saints Row one that came with like an island or something.
There was one for
I don't know. You know, Saints Row.
There was one for
the islands.
What was the parkour zombie game from a couple years back?
Dying Light.
That was a zombie fortified house.
That's right.
Remember that?
Yeah.
That's completely insane. And then the thing I always think about was there was like a contest to name your son Turok.
That's not real.
Not a bundle, but I have to bring it up.
If you name your son Turok, we'll make another Turok game.
We name your son Turok. Social services are going to come and take that dinosaur hunter away from you.
Oh, man.
Wait, is that real?
If you're listening to the show Turok from the orphanage or the jail, thanks. I hope things are going well.
Did you know that if you pre-ordered Gex 2, they filled your house with little geckos? They came in at night, they just opened a window, they put a bag of geckos.
What if your house was already full of geckos? They release crickets in there so the geckos have a nice feast? God, okay. Bunch of games out this week. One I want to talk about real quick. I haven't actually played it. Jackbox Party Pack 4.
Yep.
I was playing Jackbox Party Pack 3 this weekend. I had some people over. So I remember when the first one got announced, and I remember like You Don't Know Jack was like big, like that was this game that had been they'd have it on like school library computers.
Yeah,
like, what is this? It's trivia. You play by yourself on a computer. That sounds stupid.
It's like an angry bald man with an exploding head or whatever.
Yeah, it was the internet.
Have it on like the discount aggro. Rack at like CompUSA. Yeah. You're like, what the hell is that?
And it was like Spencer's Gifts, the game.
Yeah. And like a buddy of mine was doing PR for it, and he was like, please come to this Jackbox Party Pack trivia thing that we're doing to please cover the game. Please, like, just like as a favor to me, cover this game. And I was like, this seems kind of like, I think we wound up not doing it. And then quietly, the Jackbox Party Pack games became like a regular go-to thing whenever I have parties.
Because
those games rule. So if you like to have friends over, like to goof around, they're so smart, and they get so weird and so silly.
And these the way these work is that you play on your phone, right?
Yeah, like
your controller is your phone.
Yeah,
yes.
You type in like this random kind of all purpose like URL, and then it gives you like a room code, and then occasionally it sort of breaks the game because if you're all on like shoddy Wi-Fi and one person's got a better phone, you just lose.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Occasionally it doesn't work, but that's not really the point. It's more about just having fun with your friends.
Yeah,
yeah. And these are effectively like digital board game packs, but a lot of the games are much simpler than a board game. Don't think about like Settlers of Catan.
Oh yeah,
whatever,
most of it's about like being funny.
Games, yeah.
Goofing on your friends. Also, download. I think it's still free. That's You.
Yeah,
That's You is a free PSN game that does it's a first party game that does very similar.
That's like Wes Anderson's Jackbox Party Pack.
Yeah, totally.
That game. I feel like it has. They completely overdid it on the art.
I'm like, this is so nice, and all I'm trying to do is like talk about how my friends fart.
Yeah. No, that stuff's great. The Jackbox thing is really cool because like each thing or each collection sort of has like 5 to 7 different games in it, and they all scale. Like some of them are like 1 or 2 players. One of them are like 2 to 8 players.
Yep.
And some work better than others in terms of having a small group of people. But and it's a weird game to recommend because many of you don't have like 5 people in your house all the time.
Sure, you're playing games online. Yeah.
Yeah, but like if you're in college or something, or like you live somewhere where your friends come by, or even like you have like a wife and kids or whatever it is, like. These are really fun. These are really fun.
Like, I'm friends with a couple of people who own bars, and they were like, hey, we want to put in a game, and all we have is this, like, Amazon Fire that we stream through. Can we get games on it? I'm like, yeah, download Jackbox. Mm-hmm. Because you can put it on silent at a bar, people can log in on their phones, and then all of a sudden you have a bunch of strangers playing a game with each other.
In the Party Pack 3, there's a game that's called, like, T-Shirt Showdown or something, and it's probably the most just beautifully insidious, like brilliant thing I've ever seen a game do. Like we're all up in arms about microtransactions and stuff. This game is a game where everyone, it's sort of like Pictionary, everyone draws like weird random images and then you write weird captions and then they get put on fake t-shirts and then they get kind of shuffled around and everyone's voting on t-shirts and they're like nonsense things. Like it's a picture of like Darth Vader eating spaghetti and it says like Goku eats farts or something.
Yeah.
What? That doesn't make any sense. Everyone's, having drinks and laughing. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the game, it has a link on your phone. It's like, you could buy any of these shirts. And it's like, you don't get a cut of the shirt. Like the Jackbox people just get money from the shirt you bought. It's like those, like, I feel like when like Google has like a CAPTCHA and it's like, identify all of the parts of this photo that are street signs. And you're like, I'm training an AI right now.
Yeah.
I feel like we're training those Facebook t-shirt algorithms. That's like,
side note, you can buy those as shirts too. I have dozens of them.
We bought a bunch of
CAPTCHA shirts. They're great. People come up to me and they're all the time. They're like, hey, you book ups? You got it right. You can get in now.
Hey, you're not a robot. Let's be friends.
You're not a replicant. There's also another game in the Sony's Playlink thing, like the phone-based games, is coming out soon called The Hidden Agenda, and that's the one by Supermassive, the Until Dawn guys.
Oh, cool.
And it's like a spy game that you play, nice. Like an 8-player spy game you play on your phone. And that's so awesome. I really want to see what that's like.
I want to get like just a bunch of really like big tablets and get like really artsy people over and have like the most intense game of like drawful possible. They're just doing like...
Well, Goku does eat farts.
The cool thing about these games is that they're not like... There isn't always like a judge in the game that's just like, that's the best answer. Sometimes it's just you and your friends being like, we're horrible, but he's the least horrible.
Yeah.
He's the most horrible. Yeah. Like I remember playing like Apples to Apples with a bunch of people once. This is a side story, but here we go. And this one girl was just like, she was like, awful, terrible, miserable. And we're all trying to guess the words. We're like, school, work. And she was like, no, it's family. And we're like, oh, you're broken. Like that's not the right answer. But she won. Because we're all like, that's great. Like, you need something because everything sucks.
You won this game of apples to apples.
My personal hell is playing apples to apples with people who don't have irony.
Yeah.
I've done that before, and it's just, and you're like, oh, you actually try to match the words up with the thing that is being just.
Oh, you're literal.
Funny at all. Yeah. Wow, that's very boring.
Well, you got to pick your friends first before you pick a game to play.
Yeah, well, those people aren't my friends anymore.
Sounds like you had a couple crapples to crapples.
Apples to apples weeds out the friends.
Yeah. But Jackbox Party Pack is fun. Go check out some of these fun things if you want to have some people over. Also, Jackbox is on Switch, so if you want to drag your gaming system around with you, that helps too. Other stuff out this week, WWE 2K18. I think we're going to have Seth Rollins on Up at Noon this
week. Right.
Or coming
Seth Rogen?
Yes. Yeah. Henry Rollins himself will be there.
Incredible.
As always, the thing I'm most interested in this game is the character creator. And seeing people. Like, people made you and I last time around.
I think I did that.
Did you do that?
2 hours at work.
Max made us last time around. No.
You can make the Colonel Sandersman.
Yeah, that's weird. I don't know how that happens.
Those games are so great for just having like incredibly realistic versions of, oh, it's like Hideo Kojima comes out and he's like putting his arms around this smoke machine's going off. Then, oh, Gabe Newell's entered the ring and they're fighting. You're like, why? Why? The new one apparently has some weird wonkiness at launch. Like, they'll probably patch it out, but you were showing me like GIFs of like these guys wrestling and one of them has an entire dumpster stuck to his leg.
Yeah.
And it's just flailing around.
There's some fights that take place outside of the ring in the back room where they write all the stories.
Oh, and someone got like the casting couch like bit them.
Yeah, people there's a lot of clipping issues happening, so keep an eye on that stuff. You know,
I think those games have always had a little bit of that. And
we have an official review going up. It'll probably address all that. We're just chuckleheads, but you know, I'm so excited to try it out.
Maybe I'll actually take one of those home and just screw around with it because just like they're so like I always try to play it like a fighting game and just suck.
Yeah,
like I think it's more fun to just make people you identify.
And be like, I like the career modes in those games too, and like you know I haven't really watched wrestling since like the mid '90s or something.
I haven't watched it since David Arquette's Ready to Rumble, starring Diamond Dallas Page.
That's a movie.
Yeah. Anyway, another game out this week. This is a weird one. Rogue Trooper Redux.
Yeah, I got really angry. Brian was playing this desk today, and I got like
everyone got mad.
Like I got weird.
They're like, "What are you playing this game for?" I was like, because it's what we do at work.
Yeah.
We play games and then we talk about them on
so,
the show.
Rogue Trooper is based on a 2000 AD comic from like the British post-apocalyptic Judge Dredd comics magazine, whatever. I've never really read any Rogue Trooper. I think it's like a man who has three brains inside his head or something. I might have forgotten.
Is that what that game was about?
Something like that. He's a spaceman. He's blue. He's got a shoot guns in space, probably. Yep. Maybe not space. I don't really know. Anyway, they made a game about this in 2000, I believe.
Yeah. Literally the year 2000. So this game is 17 years old.
Oh, the old 17th anniversary. Like that silver anniversary.
The Quinceañera plus one.
If you've been playing a lot of third-person shooters and you're like, these are great, but what if they lacked all the things and all the advancements from the last 17 years, this game is for you. There is something wonderfully nostalgic about it, though, because it's like it is like no bones about it. Just like this is a 17-year-old game. They're not like, oh, we've done this, we've done this, we've done this. It's kind of just like this is what this game was.
No, they've now definitely they've like remastered all the graphics stuff. Yeah, it still looks very wonky, though.
Yeah. It is so funny how it's like, hey, you know how games like Grand Theft Auto 4 and Resident Evil 4 and Gears of War all like redefined what a third-person shooter is? Yeah, let's just go back to before that.
Yeah, it's always very, very tricky.
There's a lot of really funny stuff that happens in this game. Like, it just feels like who's the blue guy from
Dr. Manhattan
from Walking Dead who's also in Guardians of the Galaxy that you interviewed?
Oh, Michael Rooker.
Yeah,
everyone
in this game feels
he's
like
the
Michael
blue
Rooker.
Guy from Guardians of the Galaxy. He's not the blue guy from the Walking Dead.
You had me really confused there.
He probably turned blue at the end when he died.
Yeah.
Or actually he became a Walking Dead man. That's how that works. Well, look, this game feels like Michael Rooker meets Small Soldiers meets Avatar, and they're all just like running around like the environments are very narrow and weird, and then they kind of open up a little bit. Like, but everything is the geometry wise very rudimentary. There was like, there's a button where you heal, and like a robot comes out of your head and stabs you in the arm with a needle, and you keep running. You're just like,
so. What is worth noting about this game is that there's a weird partnership going on between the folks at 2000 AD and I think the company that's making games like this. And they're actually the game publisher. I think they also do some of the. I want to say Warhammer stuff. I might be wrong. But they're helping bankroll that Judge Dredd TV show that's in the works, which is like kind of the first time I've heard about.
Wait, so if you want a Judge Dredd TV show, buy Rogue Trooper Redux?
I'm not saying that.
Okay.
People want that.
But you're not.
More about Rogue Trooper Redux than we did about GT Sport. We can't talk about Rogue Trooper Redux. I don't know why this game triggers me so much.
It up.
I keep getting angry.
It's like we're a couple of rogue troopers over here. We're just trooping on about with this rogue.
No, I get it. Sometimes Max will come into work and he'll be like, "I watched the Scorpion King last night," and I'm like, "What the f- is wrong with you? They made 600 movies since the Scorpion King.
They've only made 600 movies.
I've actually never seen that. Scorpion King.
16 years?
The day you're describing has not yet happened, but it will someday.
But I'm always like, why aren't you watching, like, I don't know, like, all these movies came out this year. Like, there's great movies. I'll write a whole list for you. And he's like, oh, no, I just
wanted to watch Jeepers Creepers.
No, you push squares enough times on Netflix, your brain stops working, you want to get the Scorpion King.
No, I love because you'll make fun of me for this. You'll be like, yeah, Max came in, he was like, oh, I just watched Death Becomes Her. And I'm like, hey, I've I've actually never seen that. I'm going to add that to the list.
Yeah.
And then I come in and you're like, I'm having the deja vus.
But no, so sometimes it's okay to go back and play a game from 17 years ago or watch Scorpion King.
I want a good Judge Dredd video game. If we can't get the new, like, give me a Judge Dredd. Give me a Judge Dredd with a Nemesis system in there.
Yeah.
You're just a humorless man going around in his weird helmet.
The judgment system.
Yeah. And you go get upgrades from your butler robot.
Yeah. I like that a lot.
That'd be good. Other game Schneider. Out this week is Rob Schneider should be in the Judge Dredd game, but only as DLC. There's a game called Elex, or Elex. I'm not sure how to say it. This is from the studio that did like Risen,
those
pirate RPGs. And this game, we work at IGN. We pay attention to a lot of games that are coming out. This game is out. And I have no idea what it is.
Yep. It just appeared. It's like a big. It seems like a big open world, third person, like fantasy, destiny, like a action,
weird little visual novel on Vita. Or something. I'd be like, oh, I could see how I would miss that, or something from Steam that was already out.
Yeah,
it's not. It's an open world action RPG that's like half magic, half post apocalyptic, and it looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also like, I feel like it might be. The fact that it's just stealthily kind of coming out, maybe not really the best sign.
They did a bad job with the PRs.
It happens.
Yeah.
You know, it happens.
Also, just really curious, it looks honestly like if you got all of the biggest games of the last 5 years and just mashed them together.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like Titanfall mechs, but then like Fallout armor, but then like Destiny elves, and you're in the world of The Witcher, and just a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, go check it out. I did not know about this game either.
Also,
go check out Rogue Trooper.
Yeah, maybe check some reviews first.
And watch The Scorpion King.
Great news,
starring
everybody.
The Rock.
Yeah, there's a game coming out this week. It's called Real Farm. It's a real farming game.
Show ran out of steam.
No, I want to talk about Real Farm.
Okay.
Not really. I'm just kidding. It's real. It's like another farming simulator type game.
Let's play Stardew Valley.
I really want. I want one of those farming simulator games in reverse, where you inherit a farm that's already running very smoothly, and you just get to see how many ways you screw it up. Because like I've been playing.
Love that. Like you put eggs in the tractor.
Yeah. you just drive. I want like realistic damage physics. I want just destructible environments.
Like you wake up at 7 a.m. instead of 4:30 in the morning and you're like, what's going to happen? The farm, all the horses are dead.
You didn't cut the hen's feathers and now it's huge.
Put all the cows in the well.
I want just like the realistic thing of like, you want a realistic farming simulator. Here's how badly that would go.
Mm-hmm.
And just everything goes wrong. I want that.
You know, if you go 6 years without shearing a sheep, it becomes the size of a home.
That's what I
said. It's just like Katamari with like a farm animal.
Why didn't you pick all your corn? And I was like, I thought it would just get bigger if I left it in there.
Yeah.
And then I thought I'd have very large corn by the end, but I didn't.
You just grow corn albums.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's
I think it's a good, yeah, this game looks like a very nice, serious game about real farming, as the title would suggest. But I think we need some farms gone wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Farms gone wild.
No farm, no foul.
Warning.
Real quick, quick moment to talk about some VR games that I got to check out.
Dun, 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 dun.
There's one game called The Solus Project, which is you get kind of crash landed. I was getting weird deja vu with this because it reminded me a lot of
Farpoint.
A little bit of Farpoint. Like it kind of just does that. You see the spaceship in VR and you crash land on this planet. And basically, this one is much less about like shooting spiders and things and more about like exploration and like identifying samples and science
right
stuff. Very surprised by this because I was sort of expecting kind of small form walking simulator type of thing. It's deep. There's like a lot of stuff going on here. I was poking around. People seem to really like it who get into it. It was almost too much. Like I was playing it with Move controllers and there's like a lot of controls to have there. It's not just as simple as like press the one button and then, it's kind of, you can also play it just regular without the VR component.
Mm-hmm.
But what's really weird is you got this like sort of PDA phone thing. And you have to look at stuff that's on the screen there, which I'm sure is like fine if you're playing on like a normal screen,
mm-hmm.
but playing on the VR headset, you have to just hold it up sort of close to your face to read.
That's very weird.
Some
VR games get like that where it's sort of like, scratching your head, patting your stomach at the same time.
Thing,
where you're like your camera control and movement or head control is done with your head, your neck. And then your hands are like controlling like the X and Y axis, but you're also aiming and shooting, but you're interacting with things. And then you have like wrist straps and then you have headphones in and there's a cable running down your leg and then the cat walks in or whatever.
Yeah.
Or
And then you get freaked out because you realize you don't have a cat.
And you've been dead the whole time.
This is also if you remember what your body is, you're like, I look – like if I holding someone holding a phone up like this to their face, I just feel like that's what my mom would look like in space. She'd be, and then she'd be like, call me and be like, I don't know how to text anymore. Like,
well, that's how that
can't read it.
That's how I felt playing Arkham VR, which I really liked. But like, if you had walked into the room and seeing Batman do that, he would have been like just basically holding up a clipboard, like, where are you, Robin? Where's Robin? I can't find Robin. You're like, is he okay? We should mention real quick that it's the 1 year anniversary of PSVR.
Oh, yeah.
And they have sold 1 million units worldwide, and there's a huge sale going on PSN right now of pretty much every PSVR game ever made. And if you're a PlayStation Plus subscriber, a lot of those games are in like the $2 to $7 range, which I think for short experiences that are, you know, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, a lot of cool stuff in there. A lot of stuff I didn't even, I guess I missed. Like there's a game called So You Want to Be a Ghostbuster, which is basically like a Ghostbuster simulator. But there's also like Until Dawn and a bunch of other games like, let's see, Time Travel or whatever it was.
Robinson the Journey?
Robinson the Journey is a different one. But yeah, that's on there too. A lot of games that are like, they were like pretty good. They had some problems. Totally worth jumping in on a flash sale like this. Yeah. So
I wish we got more VR bundles. Like, I feel like that's such a perfect thing for
that. What are you talking about? We got this $46,000 one. It comes with PSVR.
I meant like bundles of VR games.
Oh, never mind.
You buffoon. But no, like I think that it's so often with VR, you're either getting like a small sort of bite-sized experience, or you're getting something that's almost surprising at how complex it is, and it's vaguely overwhelming to be playing it with the hat on the head. But yeah, it's sort of counterpoint to Solus Project, which is like very in-depth and exploration heavy with like horror elements and just a lot to take in. I also played this game called Spark, which feels like one of the many kind of weird VR sport Pong-like type games. Basically, it reminds me a lot of Dodgeball, but with you're in like this weird virtual space where you're, I don't know, the balls are more of like orbs. And there's like everything lights up and you're in, it's just, you know, the kind of the, I don't know, you're making a space. Like what kind of space do you want it to be? It can be anything. And it's, I feel like that's sort of a thing that everyone's kind of trying to do. And you look at like early like Atari games and it was kind of the same deal where you just have these very archetypal, like, oh, it's a game with the ball or a game with the gun or a game with the vehicle. And it's sort of like, you don't want to focus too much on what the concept is. You more just like get the feeling right, you know.
I think a lot of PSVR launch games felt a lot like that, for better or worse, which I think really works in a lot of ways. Like it's sort of like it's taking the core concept that you would find in something like an NES game,
right
and expanding it into this like mind-bending VR universe, which I think I like, you know, for the most part. Where the issues arose with a lot of those games were the pricing models would be like $30, $40 for something that really should have been like a $10, $15
game. Or it's online multiplayer only, and you got to rely on finding somebody else who's playing at the same time.
Yeah. I specifically remember being upset at the price on Super Hypercube, which I adored, but like just didn't really feel like it was a $30 experience. You know, it felt like a very simple, like, kind of phone game. And I mean that, like, in a good
way. Kind of feels like Super Hexagon.
Yeah. Totally.
Which is great.
I don't play, like, $60 for Tetris. That's weird.
Yeah.
But, yeah, happy birthday to PSVR. I want to say real quick, it's been really awesome using that thing and covering that thing. I also want to say I'm a little pissed off.
Oh.
Because there's a new version of PSVR coming out that fixes my main issue with it, which is the PSVR PS4 Pro HDR pass-through, which you have to unplug, replug. You've heard me complain on the show before like an idiot. It's a stupid thing to complain about. It's the ultimate first world problem, which we're full of on a show about video games. That's where we are. I'm sorry. It's a first world thing. When PSVR launched, it launched within a few weeks of the PS4 Pro. I bought both because I love them, and I really, really do love both of those products. They've never communicated well in a traditional sense by any means. The PS4 Pro has given some power to the PSVR to some games to make them look better, which I appreciate, and that's awesome. But it blocks HDR. So Sony has fixed that with this weird PSVR 1.0.2, whatever it is, which I think they're sort of going to stealthily sneak out into stores, replace all the old models. The problem is this product was fixed on a cable level, which is physically connected to the PSVR. So to fix it myself, I would have to trade in or just completely replace the version I have.
Yeah, you just got to get a new one. I'm in the same boat. I bought the launch one too. It also adds like a headphone jack that's in the helmet versus in like the weird dongle on the side, which is nice because those things are constantly getting ripped out of my ears.
Which, like, you know, this when you're an early adopter, this happens. Like,
right. It just sucks that the thing is so like it's so one piece as opposed to being modular. It seems like if the thing you're replacing is a cord, it should be easy enough to swap that out. Mm-hmm. But that's not really an option. Also, just thinking about it, the fact that it is a $500 device that has or $400 or whatever the hell it is that is can be completely ruined by a cord fraying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like maybe, I don't know, think ahead of that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm totally with you on that. And I feel like this, it's sort of like a slap in their face to their most loyal customers, people like us, right? Like I bought this thing to champion it on this show and other shows, and I have. And this is something that's really annoyed me. And it's actually, like we talked about this a few weeks ago, but it's one of the small hurdles that keeps me from playing my PSVR more.
Right.
Is that when I am playing Horizon or Shadow of War, and I want that those HDR sunsets to come through, and then I want to play a round or two of Super Hypercube or something like that, unplugging everything and plugging it back in is just one extra little step. Yeah. And this fixes that, but it's just not an option for me because I don't really want to trade in my whole unit and go through all that and eat the cost.
Especially when we don't know if a year from now we're going to get the PSVR 2
exactly.
or 2.0. Yeah. Like, yeah.
And we've wireless. Heard from our audience so many times the number one question on PSVR is, should I get this now or should I wait? And I still don't have a damn answer for you because the target keeps moving, you know? That said, it's cheaper now. We saw some bundles pop up in the last few days. I think I heard you talking about one in the office today, right? A PSVR
yes,
bundle?
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that's, and like you said, though, also on PSN, like so many games are discounted. Like,
I know.
For $50 or $100, you can get like enough VR to melt your eyeballs.
I mean, I try to make this a positive show, but I have to throw a little bit of hell over at Sony's way just for this because it's like, it's a thing I want fixed. It's a thing I want to love and I want to enjoy. And they're fixing it, but they're doing it in a way that almost sort of spites the early adopters. Yep. So it is what it is. I know that happens. If I bought a launch Nintendo DS that looked like a birthday cake, you know, and then they fix a design. Like this happens all the time.
For some reason, I thought you said you were going to say it looked like birth control.
Kind of. I mean, yeah. It's, you know. Yeah.
I mean, this fall, I think I want to upgrade to like 4K HDR and get a PlayStation Pro 2.
Yeah.
And I just, I don't know. The hang up is kind of the VR part of it, which is so stupid to be like, oh, like the cool thing I got last year is sort of interfering with that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Do I trade in my beat up old one?
It's kind of a pain, but happy birthday either way.
Yeah, it's a cool hat. We're gonna wind things up. We're gonna do rapid fire over on our YouTube channel. If you have not already, hop over there. It's youtube.com/IGNBeyond.
Yep.
And we've got Let's Plays going on.
Yeah, we had tons. Last week we put Shadow of War up. This week we are putting up The Evil Within.
Oh, cool.
We recorded those last week, so yeah.
Those
are a ton of fun.
Sneak a peek at the schedule of games we're going to be playing over the next few months. We are going to be doing some PlayStation VR stuff. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, I don't know how to capture that, but
it'll be fine.
We'll troubleshoot that. What could go wrong?
Yeah.
And on that note, you can find us all on Twitter. I'm Max Scoville. Brian is Agent Bizzle. And Marty is McBiggity with two G's and two T's. And we'll be back next week with much more about the games.
Yep. And it's good to be back. I miss you guys.
Miss you.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode, so search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.